Welcome back to the Carly Pilk Boys pod. I'm David Ferrier.
Stephen Merchant.
We're two little radio fellas air checking the old Ricky Gervais XFM shows. I've listened heaps. This is Zach's first time through. We are up to series 2, episode 16, which was broadcast December 7, 2002. Zach, what's your Heat magazine style headline about this show?
How to keep your data safe from spy crabs.
Ricky Gervais and Steve Merchant uncover all. Big day for Carl on this episode. He's got his MTV audition live, and he really comes loaded with content.
In a way, like the bag's full of content, but there's not much in there.
There's a phrase like throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks.
Yeah.
None of it sticks.
None of it sticks. And I actually feel like that they're going backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
I think there was they were super structured and they would come very prepared. And now it's gone all the way the other way to where it's like Carl's taken everything. Remember how we used to compliment Steve's producing skills and would be like, Steve's kind of running it a little bit. And then Ricky and Carl are throwing stuff in and kind of fighting a bit and bantering. Now, you know, there was a sweet spot there, I reckon. And I think we've gone too far the other way. Because this is just like, if Carl's stuff falls flat, which it kind of has, they had nowhere to go. Remember we used to hear stories about Ricky's week? That's so long ago now.
So the bow has stretched all the way to the other end now where Carl is just controlling it and you're thinking and that it's actually maybe gone too far.
Without being a content director.
Please, that's what we're here for. We're air checking these shows.
There's not enough variety anymore. It's just all these weird facts that aren't like if they don't stick, then it's kind of like, oh, okay. Like, it feels like that you've just Googled 100 weird facts about the world.
Which can be great content, but you got to dole it out in bit by bit.
Yeah, a little bit, and then a personal story. I'm probably now seeing what content directors have said over the years, where they're like, variety, a personal story, a relationship story, a weird news story, you know, mix it up a little bit. Because now when it's just like, this episode for me, and you know, they acknowledge that it probably wasn't their best episode. It was just too much of one
thing. They've fallen into doing the whole second half of the show, which is just getting through Rockbusters and educating Ricky, which is sort of like, I don't know, becoming a bit repetitive. But let's just touch on the stories that they tell Carl for the MTV audition.
Well, that was a great...
doesn't it?
That was a great variation.
But I feel like they fundamentally got wrong what Carl's appeal is. I was trying to think of like, what were they hoping would happen? And I thought they were hoping that they would get another man moth moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, no. Do you want to talk about it now? Or do you want to wait for that air check?
Yeah, we'll get to it later. Something I do want to talk about first is I've realized I really should just each week Google Ricky, Steve and Carl just to see what's going on in their world.
Sure.
So this is from a couple of weeks ago. We're recording this on the 9th of May, 2022. So a couple of weeks ago, the thief, his wife and the canoe viewers baffled after spotting Carl Pilkington.
Okay.
Viewers watching ITV's true crime drama, The Thief, His Wife and the Canoe, were surprised to see a familiar face appear on their TV screens. An Idiot Abroad star, Carl Pilkington, appeared as a detective questioning the fraudulent couple.
Just an acting gig.
Some viewers believed the detective was just a lookalike until the end credits confirmed it was in fact the 49-year-old comedian.
Do you have a screenshot there at all?
I've got more than a screenshot. The four-part drama, which started on ITV on Sunday, tells the story of John Darwin, Eddie Marson. So Eddie Marson, cracking actor, really, really good. And his wife, Monica Dolan, in the early 2000s, the pair orchestrated a preposterous plan to fake John's death so they could claim his life insurance money. Someone has already, a YouTube account called Carl Dilkington, has very graciously cut together every scene that Carl is in the first episode. So this is like Carl is branching out now into just straight acting roles, not even his own series. And this is a drama.
Well, he did a screen test for MTV in 2002, and just a short 20 years later, he's finally acting. Off.
Here we go. Hang on.
No, no. Who is it then, John?
The banks, the lenders, No, no, Mike, this needs
Hang on, I'll skip ahead to when Carl is speaking. He's just listening, here. It's great listening. It's active listening.
Okay, so you're still sticking to the story that you have amnesia?
I do. I did.
From when to when?
From a holiday in June 2000 till about mid-2003.
Okay, so just after all the money was paid out?
Yes.
Right. That's lucky.
And I'd like to add that that money was claimed in good faith by Anne. They can't claim that back, I'm afraid. Those are their own rules.
And so you don't remember anything about what happened on the day you went missing?
Absolutely not.
But you do remember that you definitely didn't plot to fake your own death for financial gain.
He's pulling apart his story.
No comment.
Inspired casting.
I love it. He's doing well there. And it's fascinating to see him because obviously, well, I haven't seen him since An Idiot Abroad, which is what, 10, 12 years ago? Mm. Maybe even more?
And so 2010, yeah, a little bit. Yeah, well, it was when it started.
But. And so it does hint towards an experience I have listening to the radio show. So in this episode, we hear about how he's 29, actually 30, but he lies about his age in front of the MTV people. And I constantly have to readjust because in my mind, I'm picturing the Idiot Abroad person. So when I listen to the radio shows, I have to scale it back 10 years and go, oh, no, actually, he's just turned 30 here. But now watching this, it's a surprise because I'm like, oh, obviously he's aged in the last 10 years. He looks 10 years older.
I read 49 and I went, no way. I thought it's an inspired piece of casting because the rest of this clip, it goes for about 11 minutes. I'll just play a little bit more where he's just picking apart this guy's story who has faked his own death.
Here they grasp of financial matters.
Right.
Just the one brain cell, you see.
Your wife, 34 years.
Tell me about it.
Would you like me to repeat?
It reminded me, I thought this is inspired casting because it reminds me of this.
To be a magnet.
What's the
bullshit? And they you're talking bullshit, and they go, oh, it's bullshit, man. And I go, well, yeah, it is bullshit, man. You're talking bullshit. And eventually, people would stop talking shit.
That's funny, because instantly I thought when I saw the interrogation scene, I'm like, because they've got a kind of is framed over someone's shoulder. I thought, what can we edit this with? Can he investigate himself? Has there been some type of thing from his younger years that we could cut it with? But unfortunately, that has music underneath, so it'd make it very difficult to cut it. Ooh. And also, it's in a train, which is like the setting is a bit weird.
No, but if there's something else on camera where Carl is telling one of his ridiculous hypotheses or something, and we then could you do have some him type being of like, interrogated by himself,
it would be quite interesting too. Because it would be obviously the same person, but legitimately aged.
Mm.
Whereas like now we see so many, like, you know, was it the Irishman that had
the
digital aging? And so you know, that's something that we could do. But also interestingly, do you see what they've done there? In the interrogation, Carl is giving a great performance, but it also is quite easy. You know, like if you are, there's stages of acting, isn't there? And sitting down at a table is level one. Because, like, you know, that's the easiest thing to do. And then also they've given him something to do with his hands, which he's got a pad and paper in front of him and he can kind of, like, jot on that. That's the other tough thing to do. What do you do with your hands? That, you know, it becomes harder and harder as you have to, I have to walk over here and I have to put this down while I'm saying the lines. Like, the craft of it, you kind of don't realize how hard it is until you try to do a little bit yourself.
So you're saying this level one acting, the West Wing with the walking down corridors and the walk and talk and turning corners.
And you're getting a paper on your left and you have to shift it out to your right.
And deliver that very dense Aaron
Sorkin
dialogue.
And there's no cuts too. It's all one take.
Yeah.
You know, they just got this two shot down the hallway.
Yeah. The highest level, the movie 1917, one take the whole movie. but
yeah, 69 minutes in, someone's like, oh, line. Oh, shit.
Ah, start again. Hopefully a sign of more to come from Carl.
I would love
in the
that.
World of drama.
I would love that. And I love the idea even now that he's just tinkering with a few things. I didn't like the idea that he wasn't working in entertainment. I don't know what he was doing, but
I like. But you know, he did his own show called Sick of It.
He did. When was that?
That was only in the last couple of years.
Yeah, so maybe he's really getting into acting now.
Yeah, I reckon he's got enough. I don't think he's the type who would be driving around in a Lamborghini and living in a giant house with a mortgage. I reckon he's made enough money that he can take his time and do his DIY.
Wouldn't it be the best? I think that would be such a fun career to
have. It'd be great.
Just taking bit roles here and there. Like, there's no investment. You don't have to have the pressure of the project.
Well, it's not even – it would be great to be able to do what you want.
Yeah.
And if you are in this business and presumably you meet a lot of people and a lot of friends make stuff, and then the idea that you can just like pop up in stuff that your friends are making that you want to. I've always thought it was so cool in the music video for Tenacious D tribute. Ben Stiller walks past.
Yeah, I saw that.
He's
recently.
An extra.
Yeah, and why? Who does he know that?
But exactly, like, I would love to. How cool would it be to be like, yeah, no, I'll show up. I'll hang out with you guys while you're doing this, and I'll pop up in the background.
In Ben Stiller's career, so
2001. It was Zoolander time.
Oh, okay. So you reckon he had hit big with some movies?
Probably. He might have even directed that music video. Actually, now that I think about it,
there's something about Mary was like late '90s, wasn't it?
'98. Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess he was pretty well known.
It's a luxury, and I hope we see more of Carl in drama series. Maybe a slightly higher difficult. Maybe next time he can stand up for a bit and then sit back down.
Well, if he did his own show, I imagine the whole show isn't him That's sitting true. Down. But he probably has had a bit more experience.
But you know what? I think it's probably equal level. At least here he is not playing himself.
True.
So he just had to memorize the lines because he was playing a version of himself in Sick of It. I will just point out Olivia Colman started out in comedies. She was in The Office. Yep. We did on Brady Brett Boys. Check it out. She was in Peep Show. And now she is an Academy Award winner, multi-time nominee.
Well, she's done a lot of period films. So yeah. Could you see Carl doing that?
Absolutely. As like a peasant.
No, I was thinking in like a big Napoleon era hat.
What are you doing, Napoleon? Stop trying to invade everyone. Ridley Scott's making the Napoleon movie right now.
There we go.
He's having a laugh. So if we see Carl winning a BAFTA for acting, that'll be my life will be complete.
To be fair to Carl Wright, what a career he's carved. In this episode, we hear about I think it's in this episode, Ricky kind of goes, you were just cutting together the jingles before we found you.
That was last week.
And that's what he was doing.
Yeah.
And he would have thought, because we've been in these jobs, you sit in this job and you might be happy doing it. I'm not saying that it's but you think, what's my career progression? I'll probably be doing something like this for the next 20 years. I'm a production guy. I don't think he'd think, oh, when I'm 50, I'll be doing bit roles in dramas.
And he has Ricky and Steve to thank from that.
But, coming full circle here, what does he say in the MTV interview in this? He says he's never planned anything out.
Yeah. He's just gone with the flow. It's quite a zen approach. Yeah. And it's led to, look where it's led to. But it requires...
We could cut that over the top of this as an inspirational piece. Him talking about doing the drum solo in the musical and just going with his instincts has led him to quite an interesting career.
Absolutely. But it requires people like Ricky and Steve to lift him up. Because you say like, oh, you know, we know people, you do these jobs. But in my experience, almost 100% of the time, people keep you at arm's length. It's like, well, if you're a production guy, you're a production guy. We're not going, like, we can't, no, we couldn't possibly because people need to categorize.
So...
So I feel like Carl is just such a special exception, part to do with his talent and his uniqueness, but also because he met Ricky, met the right person.
In a way, you go like Ricky. I know that, you know, a lot of it was Ricky making fun of Carl, and I hope that, you know, they all feel good about that. But in a way, Ricky, it takes someone who's quite generous in their performance to bring someone in.
And is not insecure that you'll step on because their
the
light.
Fact that he's given so much of the reins to Carl on this show now indicates some level of trust. And, you know, I did comment that I think that has made it go downhill. But, you know, a lot of people would go, a lot of comedians in particular would go, no, I do the jokes.
Yeah.
I'm the one who says the funny thing and everyone laughs.
Yeah.
Whereas Ricky seems happy to be like, no, this is the 2 hours where I'm entertained. Like, I bring you in and you entertain me. What have you got, Carl?
Yeah.
What have you found this week? Entertain me.
Yeah, it's a unique setup. Let's get into the air check. Break one. It's a big first break because Carl is stressed about the audition. They talk about Jeremy Spake, who... Off Wikipedia. In 1996, Spake featured in the BBC documentary series Airport, where he worked as the ground services manager for Russian airline Aeroflot. His appearance in the program brought him to wider public notice and celebrity. He speaks fluent Russian. How's this? Jump 20 years later. In February 2022, the BBC announced that Spake would return to Heathrow Airport to present a new 6-part documentary series, Inside the Airport, The Return of Jeremy Spake, for broadcast on BBC One later this year. So I know that that guy and that show was a big inspiration for The Office. It was, is Spinal Tap, the kind of the first mockumentary. And then this idea that documentaries were being made about ordinary people was a motivator for them doing The Office.
But Airport isn't... a mockumentary, it's a documentary, so it's real.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so they were...
And they saw that and they said, what happens if we put a comedy character
great
in there?
Fertile character. Because that's what, like, people would be funny and not know it in those documentary series. True. And they would get a bit of fame, and then so it all so plays in perfectly to for someone like David Brent, who wants that fame, so he will play it up to the camera. Jeremy Spake, by the way, has written 2 books.
There you go.
Yeah. He's been given lemonade, he's made lemons. Wait. Other way around.
That's a good saying, though. When life gives you lemonade, make like lemons.
Carl's attitude is that it could all go wrong, which I think is just an interesting to hear how, like, he's focusing purely on the negatives of the opportunity. He's really worried about it instead of being excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that's just an interesting mindset and
it's a very anxious mindset.
He's been successful in spite of that.
True.
Yeah. He also talks about the day that there was no news, and I looked this up. It actually happened 18th of April, 1930. The BBC's news announcer had nothing to communicate. Quote, "There is no news," was the script of the 8:45 news bulletin before piano music was played for the rest of the 15-minute segment. The wireless service
here's some piano.
Then returned to broadcasting from the Queen's Hall in Langham, place, London, where the Wagner operator opera was being performed. Imagine that.
Jerry Seinfeld has a joke about that. It's something about the idea. What does he say? He's always amazed that they fit the news into the newspaper every day.
Yeah.
He goes, it always fits exactly in the newspaper. It's like there's never an article left over or they never come up short.
Yeah. But that's where it'd be. Because you'd be like, well, yeah, there is. There's stuff that doesn't make the cut, Jerry. Comedy fact checker.
I think he knows that.
I saw a comedian last night because the comedy festival's on. And I think I'm becoming a bad comedy audience member because in my mind, a lot of the things, there were times where he was saying like, and then the person came in and said this. And in my mind, I was like, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
You're making that up for comic effect.
I don't like that either. Was it... an effective comic effect?
Not for me. No. I don't know. Like, there were ripples of laughter.
You were doing the Pilkington.
Bullshit! So coming out of break two, they played Debaser by Pixies twice in the last hour, and it's Carl's fault, apparently. Really winding Carl up early. That's something I'm glad has gone away from radio. There's no anxiety about the same song playing too frequently because we have nothing to do with it.
That's true. And if not, it's almost the opposite problem. It's like, why have you only played Ed Sheeran 3 times today? 6 times minimum.
Once every 90 minutes, please. And then Carl gets in trouble because he was on Zoe Ball's show throughout the week and he was doing all the jellyfish stuff. So another little sign that his star is starting to rise. In break three, we get the Rockbusters prizes. I think Wild Weather is probably the funniest thing that's ever been put on DVD.
Oh, man, wasn't there a sweet spot in media? It was, you know, just when we had a boom of DVDs and things like that. So there was a lot of them, But we still had like these niche shows.
Mm.
Whereas now, there'd never be a program like that made.
No, it'd be a YouTuber. It'd be like a storm chasing YouTuber who would make something just as good.
No, it wouldn't be, because the reason why this is good is because they went to a lot of money and effort to put it on a VHS. On a YouTube video, you're like, no, I can understand that someone in their room would do that. Like, the difference between the effort of production and the product is what makes Storm, the wild weather, we're counting down 100 storms.
I'm pretty sure there are still those ads that say, like, get a... DVDs of Mother and Son for just 20. Call up now. I'm sure I've still seen it, but it's stuck in my mind because it's like in 2022, they're still flogging those.
The guy who wrote that was my uni lecturer.
Mother and Son is one of the few Australian three-camera studio sitcoms that's ever existed. Mm. Another one was Hey Dad, which we don't talk about anymore. But yeah, Mother and Son. I remember it being quite good, but...
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot left over from the whole basis is that the mum's cognitive abilities are deteriorating. And that's where a lot of the humour comes from, the fact that she can't remember things. And I don't know how that would play these days. Mm. So, you know, there's a bit of the times, but his character was, who's the main dude? Isn't that Norm Gunston?
Yes.
Yeah. The main actor had another... character called Norm Gunston, right?
Yeah.
And he was like a reporter who would go to press
conferences. Very nervous and sweaty and awkward. And
it was kind of like a Borat thing.
Yes, it was.
He would go and interview famous celebrities who had come to Australia and they would have no idea who he was, obviously. There's a famous one, him talking to the Guns N' Roses. I think it was Guns N' Roses. And they kind of just think that he's this normal reporter and he's, you know, asking funny questions and he's in character. And back in a time too where all the journalists are laughing. Like there's no, like even Guns N' Roses, they're like laughing along as well. There's no like combative nature to it. Like everyone's like, oh yeah, this guy's doing a joke. Yeah,
yeah,
we'll go along with it for a while.
Yeah, he's got an infamous clip with Muhammad Ali as well. But you say how it was a precursor for Borat. There's another one. Like, have you ever watched Frontline?
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Frontline, I was watching it going like, this has echoes of The Office before The Office. Oh, it's 94, 97.
I haven't seen Frontline.
It's a mockumentary about a magazine news show, like A Current Affair.
Yes.
And it's a comedy group. The guys and girls that made The Castle made this sitcom. They did three seasons called Frontline. Recommend it. Highly recommend it. Still funny to this day. Very nice, very of its time in terms of all the... technology and stuff, but yeah, a lot of the same characteristics, including the lead character who is just totally unaware of how he's perceived and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
that would have been around the same time as the Gary Shandling show as well.
Gary Shandling, great show.
But was that, I wonder if that was just like of the zeitgeist that they both kind of came up with it or do they feel
hang on, you mean Larry Sanders.
Larry Sanders.
It's Gary Shandling show was his sitcom before, but it was very meta and it was very, he would break the fourth wall and he would get in a little cart and drive between sets on the studio. It's a good show, but it is like very high concept. But Larry Sanders, yes.
Yeah,
that's actually probably what Frontline were ripping off or something like that, but... Another great show, Larry Sanders. So we get the Rockbusters for this week, which whatever. Did you get the first one? The first one was very gettable.
Led Zeppelin, yeah easily. Okay.
In break four, we get more of Carl's mum's Rockbusters. This group thinks of lots of things. Imagination.
See, because now, as you mentioned earlier, not only are we doing Carl's two big segments, but we're also doing the offcuts of Carl's two big segments because we're getting his mum's Rockbusters and then also other stuff he's found on the internet.
Yeah. And then we get an idea, Carl's first pitch for what he could do on MTV.
If there's one reason why I'd like to do it, is I was watching Attenborough, the mammals program. I reckon I could do something like that.
Right. Right.
And just have like me, instead of Attenborough, like a, you know, a young sort of fresh person.
Yeah.
Watching like certain animals and saying, do we need these? Do you know what I mean?
Not a bad way to incorporate some education into your music television watching.
Not only do I love it, but it's also, we've spoken about how they predicted live streams and they predicted, was it YouTube? whatever. This is kind of like the React videos that you see on YouTube or even TikTok.
Or even sort of what we're doing right now.
Yeah, where he plays a piece of content. They cut to Carl, looks to camera. Do we need him?
Do we need just watching a jellyfish swim. He breaks down what makes jellyfish so useless. And I tend to agree with Carl. I think it's one of his better theories. Jellyfish. I mean, we've said it here. The ones in Australia will kill you.
I feel like Ricky would say the fact that they're around mean that they're means important. That,
yes, of course. And then in the same break, Steve almost pitches An Idiot Abroad.
So MTV flies you around the world to the most incredible exotic locations. You sort of climb up a tree or whatever next to, I don't know what lives up a tree, some kind of rare parrot. You say, look at that. It's colourful. It's interesting.
Oh, you like sloths, don't you?
No, they just live up trees, but I'd say, do we need them?
A broadcaster sending him around the world to exotic locations for Carl. I'm pretty sure I've seen Carl climbing up a tree in one of the episodes.
Do you think that would have been a better follow-up to life's the bucket list one? What was the bucket list one? The one he did after An Idiot Abroad.
Well, he did Moaning of Life after Moaning An Idiot Abroad, but he did.
But that was like a, that was, he was ticking off a bucket list, wasn't he?
No, I think that was, that one was more, was finding out what the meaning of life is to people. Right.
Well, see, yeah. I felt like that was An Idiot Abroad light.
Yeah.
They didn't change it enough. Would this have been a better sequel? Him doing
Carl doing
animals.
A nature program. Yeah.
Like
going
to,
around the world to meet exotic animals and decide the if they get to live or die.
But imagine if he was camping in the Amazon or something like that.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how he would react to that?
Yeah. I went camping with my girlfriend last week and we had a possum on top of the tent.
What?
We freaked out.
How did it support it?
It was a glamping tent, so it was quite big and had a proper structure.
And what happened?
So it was crawling.
Did it just jump off?
It jumped off, and I was like, it's got to be a possum. We don't have bears here. You know, like, what other nocturnal animals are there? And then I sort of moved, and the possum did it that weird kind of growling hiss that it does, which is very distinct to possums. So I'm like, oh, it's a possum. Went back to sleep.
Are they fighting or having sex? That's always the question.
I don't know. I've heard here's a little insight into Australian mammals. I didn't realize that in the middle of the night, if you are around where koalas are, if you're camping, male koalas will climb down their trees to the ground and, much like male lions, will just let everyone know that it's their territory.
Really?
And they do that with this very loud grunting, like raw thing. So I was asleep, woken up by that sound, thinking that like there's a wild pig or something that's about to run through my tent. But no, I learned the next day that it was koalas.
Just letting you know, stay away from the females.
Yeah, but isn't it interesting? They only did it at nighttime when no one could see. They're acting all tough when everyone's asleep.
Come back down in the
come
day.
At me. I'm a koala. I've got two thumbs.
Fight me on even ground.
Yeah.
Not with this night vision stuff that you have.
So, yeah, great to see. I think it's a big miss that Carl hasn't done some sort of nature documentary yet.
He could come to Australia. I think he would have a lot of opinions on marsupials.
I was so excited when he did come to Australia for Idiot Abroad. But they sent him out to do the in South Australia to go in the cage with the great whites.
I don't remember
and
that.
He, he didn't have a good time. He was overnight on this boat and got very unwell. Stuff. So
I'd see even just a kangaroo, I'd love to see him dissect what they're about.
Yeah.
I'd love
that. Carl reacts to a kangaroo. In break five, they come out of a song by The Streets. Just shout out to The Streets. Absolutely loved them back around these times. One of those acts I think about every now and then, go like, why didn't they become huge? Anyway. And then we get the first story for the MTV audition, the one about crabs. This is the first time you've heard it, Zach. Were you convinced?
Yeah. No, I'll take you through my thought process. First thought, good idea, guys. So they say, you're always complaining that you can't find stuff. Steve and I, you know, a bit of a reveal. We're pranking you a bit here, but we're going to pull the rug out from you. We've had a look. This is what we found. I thought, good idea. Twist it. Change it up. Then they started talking about it. For about a second, I believed it. Or no, I believed that they had misunderstood it. I was like, no, guys, like, I thought that it was possible that if you had eaten, like, a microchip that they could recover the microchip and it still had. That's where I thought they were going. But Then they go, they found him in formation. I thought, no, they didn't. And so, but my first instinct wasn't that they were lying. It was that they had been tricked. And I was like, you're doing the same thing Carl does. You've believed something. And then as it went on, I thought, oh, okay, no. They know that this is fake.
They're winding him up.
I thought it was a great idea. I liked where they were going with it. I just thought I think you might have the same opinion. There wasn't enough opportunity for Carl to really be led down the garden path. All it was, they just went on. It was too deep, too detailed, and they didn't let Carl add anything to it or ask any questions. So it was like, do you believe it?
Mm.
And he's like, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, gotcha!
Yeah.
Gotcha! But he doesn't have much investment in it. If they had kind of got him to question more and like, what does that make you think of and stuff like that, maybe it'd be a bit more back and forth.
For a Carl screen test, it should have been Carl leading the story. Mm. It would have made more sense even if it was, tell us the story about the horse in the house again.
Mm.
But they, for that audition, they got Carl just sitting there listening for most of it. And as you said, at the end, he was like, okay, cool. All right, wow.
It reminded me that in you have to be, actually, that's what you're saying. You have to, when you're pranking someone, I think you have to know something about them, how they're going to react and play to that. And so you can tell in the second one about the bodybuilding baby who came out early, bought its way out. They say to each other, I knew that he would find the first one more interesting. And that's the type of way that you have to think. You have to think about your co-host. It's like, what would they be more interested in and kind of navigate it towards that? We did this prank once on my co-host where I was going to get someone from the radio station to call him to accost him about, I forget exactly what it was. He had left something out and we were always getting in trouble for leaving things out. And I forget exactly what it was about, but I wanted them to tell him a story about how it had fallen over on a piece of equipment and everyone was really upset at him and everyone was really disappointed and he would have to come in and do a thing. And then I went out for breakfast with him so that I could be there when he received the call and I was going to kind of film it. And I thought also if I'm with him at the time, he won't think it's a prank because he'll be like, oh, why? Zach's here. It can't be him. The person, you know, they're not a performer, obviously. So it's understandable. But I was like quite specific about what I wanted the punishment to be for that reason. And they in the moment just said like, you owe us $1,000. And Dom just said like, yeah, that's fine. I'll pay that. I'm so sorry. And I specifically didn't want it to be money because I knew that money wouldn't be an incentive for him. That wouldn't be something that he'd be upset about because it's not that he's a high roller. It's just that's not something he'll just go, whatever it is, I'll pay it.
Yeah.
The thing that would get a reaction is if he said that he had to come in and face a panel or something like that. Like something that would be like, oh, no, they're angry at me. And so anyway, we didn't get a reaction. He just goes, oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, I'll pay that. Of course, we have. He actually said our company will pay for it. And I thought, no, we won't. What are you talking about? But he's like, we'll cover that. And so it didn't work. But it was because I knew that he wouldn't react to a monetary punishment. And so you kind of got to know how your person will react.
Yeah, and it feels like it was just a slight miscalculation here. I really think they were looking for a man moth moment, but they just didn't get it. They just got, you know, a reaction to a slightly weird story and then a second story which was just so bonkers that even he could see through it.
I did enjoy it though and I thought it was a good idea. It was just the execution was a little
off. The stories were creative as well. I thought they were just close enough because Ricky's
told... The first one was.
Yeah, Ricky's told the story about like how... And it's a true thing that like if you... But like if you put a sponge in a blender or something, it'll reform. Or rather if you like if a leech eats some blood and then you put it at the end of a maze, it'll find its way anyway.
Well, that's what a good kind of lie, I guess.
Or yeah.
A good story is. It has an element of like it's a twist truthiness on something believable. That's what I hate when people kind of say they gotcha and what they do is they just change. They go like, how many elephants are killed each year?
Yeah.
They go, 50 elephants are killed each year. And you go, oh, wow. It's actually 52. You're like, well, that's within the realms of possibility. That's not a prank. I just believed you about a detail. But this is good because he kind of takes something that's like the crab one in particular. He's like in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
It's like kind of, you're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of believable. Yeah, it sounds like it could be
plausible.
But then when they start going about spy crabs, I'm like.
Yeah. Taking photos. In break seven, Carl's proper screen test happened during the song and he was sort of stressed out about that. And he asks, I love that Carl just flat out asks this, how much will he get paid? That's my favorite thing of the whole screen
test. Well, he's so practical too, where he talks about he just bought a house.
Yeah.
And if he had known he was going to be working
at MTV, he would have, yeah, exactly. That's a bit later.
Also, by the way, buying a flat at 29 on a radio producer's wage.
Yeah.
I mean, different times.
On a high street in London, far out. And then Carl tells the story, I think it's for the first time, of how his good nails got him a sweet gig when he was a kid.
So he offered the kids at the school, he said, right, all sit at your desk and put your hands on the table. And everyone did. And he walked past mine, he said, not bad, not bad.
Yeah.
And he said, you've got the afternoon off, you can go and serve biscuits and tea to the old people.
What did you say?
I said, all right then.
Was that?
Yeah. Good afternoon.
Have your nails ever got you any gigs?
My nails have never helped me at all. Have yours?
No, never been commented on. Do you think, what do you think of them? Are they fine?
They're pretty good, yeah. They're nice. They're trimmed, I like to keep trimmed them back. Short. You clearly don't bite your nails either.
Not obsessively, no.
Oh, you do bite your
occasionally.
Nails,
though.
But you know, there's people who do bite their nails. They like the pad at the end. It almost looks like it's grown because the nails really? End. So yeah, but no, I get
what's
comments.
What's your technique for cutting your nails?
I go clip, clip, clip.
Same.
Yeah,
three clip.
Pretty good. Yeah, I usually
is that what
go
you're meant to do?
Left, right, centre, and then if there's a little bit too much of an angle, I'll go back in for some cleanup.
Yeah,
for the finer
you
details.
Take the edges off.
Yeah. But I won't get the buffer out, if that's what you mean.
That's what I didn't know what we were meant to be doing.
Yeah.
It's never been explained to me.
No. Yeah. Hang on. We were never taught how to cut our nails, but somehow we worked it out.
We figured it out.
And all these kids these days with their manicures. And have you ever had a pedicure?
A pedicure, like the foot one?
Yeah.
Neither pedicure or manicure.
I highly recommend.
Which one?
Pedicure.
Okay. And why?
Because men have feet too.
Yeah, that's true.
And they get dirty and crusty.
This is a true observation.
It is like a car wash for your feet. It is, particularly if you, I like massages and stuff, right?
Mm.
So if you're one of those people that like, don't touch me, maybe not for you. But they put your feet in a little foot spa in warm water. So you get a little foot spa thing.
Does it feel awkward?
No. Well, it does if you choose it to be awkward. But you're paying, like, it's a service that you're paying for. And they come in, they use this like exfoliating cream and rub it up your shins and on your feet and stuff. It's really nice. They scrape away the dead skin. They trim your nails. They'll paint them a color if you're asked to. I haven't asked for that yet. But it's a really good maintenance thing for your feet, I think. And they feel very silky smooth at the end.
Yeah, I might take you up on that. I feel the closest I've come.
Good thing to do with your wife.
The closest I've come to that is like sometimes when the barber's giving me a haircut, actually all the time, it's a part of their process. They put a hot towel over your head and start
giving you a little massage.
And I've
absolutely
quite,
the best.
Really? I feel quite uncomfortable.
Okay.
Because you've just had a 20-minute conversation with them and then all of a sudden it's like it feels like your peers and then all of a sudden just like a clear it's like I pay you money, you give me massage.
So wait, so giving a haircut could be something a friend does for you.
We're just mates.
But actually just using their hands to create a form of pleasure, a non-sexual form of pleasure is crossing a line.
It's not crossing a line. I'm just like
it's a different dynamic
because the conversation always stops.
Yeah,
like it doesn't continue.
So how do you think the Broncos will go this weekend? Oh, it's really nice.
Like it's always like it's a good conversation. Stops for a couple of minutes while the head massage is on, and then we continue the conversation after.
I have no problem with any of it. I don't care who it is. If they've got strong hands, go for it.
Yeah. No, that's I'm not saying, I'm just saying that there's always like, it just becomes unclear what the dynamic is in that moment.
Well, you're exchanging money at the end. It's pretty clear to me.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
I'll give you a head massage.
Yeah.
So yeah, Carl's good nails got him the job at the old folks home handing out biscuits. And then they get onto the ancient art of arse reading instead of palm reading. I looked it up. There's a thing called rumpology, or bottom reading, is a pseudoscience akin to physiognomy, performed by examining crevices, dimples, warts, moles, and folds of a person's ass, in much the same way that a whatever will read your palm. The late American astrologer Jackie Stallone, mother of Sylvester Stallone, by the way, claimed that rumpology is known to have been practiced in ancient times by the Babylonians, the Indians, ancient Greeks, and Romans. I would like to see her sources on that. That seems like one of the things that you can just throw out here. It's like, let me look at your ass. Don't worry, the ancient Greeks used to do it.
Well, a couple of things. Firstly, with his logic, why, if someone's uncomfortable with you looking at their palm, would you be comfortable with your ass?
Absolutely.
That seems like that's going the opposite way.
Yes.
But then when you think about things historically, I'm like, well, maybe you could tell a lot from the ass when you didn't have ass ointments. Like, it's probably like, yeah, you've got an ass full of boils. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, you're unwell. Like, and I can predict that in the future, you're going to experience some pain. I don't know if, like, and when they go, well, they're investigating warts. Well, if you've got warts, you've probably been touching, like, you know.
See, not a rumpologist.
I can draw some conclusions from that I don't think is coming from the universe. It's just coming from logic.
But from the from a little glance at the Wikipedia page of rumpology, it has to do with the shape of the ass.
Oh, okay.
I wonder, I maybe should have, see what I mean? Different shapes of buttocks to which rumpology can attribute different properties from left to right. But these are all ladies' bums. Do you think there's been much work in a men's ass in the rumpology world?
There's a diagram shape, on there's Wikipedia. Circle,
there's sort of a pentagon.
Are you saying that they're ladies because it looks like that it's like hips?
Well, yeah, ladies.
But why are you saying they're ladies? You can't tell they're ladies.
Because they're big.
Because of the hips.
Yeah.
No, I reckon top left could be top. The top row.
These two could be. Yeah.
They're not necessarily ladies.
All right, I'll concede that.
You know your asses is what I'm learning. You can pick an ass from behind.
I can. It's one of my many skills. It's right at the top of my LinkedIn. Radio and podcast host can pick an ass from behind. I'm just going to try. So I'm going rogue here. Rumpology reading on... If you go to YouTube and type in rumpology reading, the first one is a video from 10 years ago, buttock reader. There is a man that looks like a hobbit staring at someone's ass. He's sitting down.
And he's getting in the business there.
Yeah, this is only 2 minutes, so just bear with us.
He's not looking at a distance.
Come on, long intro.
Good palm reading. A blind German psychic has claimed he can read people's futures by feeling their naked buttocks.
Wow.
Clairvoyant Alf Buck, 39, claims that a person's buttocks display lines like those on the palm of a hand, which can be read to reveal much about their character and destiny.
He's putting on a red robe like he's Harry Potter.
The lines on people's backsides are very fine and not as easy to see as the lines on hands.
A pentagram.
They are just as intensive and are very sensitive the way they react to a finger.
So he has to get into the costume before he does the reading. Well, he looks like a Satanist.
He looks like
it's
that
a big red hooded robe, and he's just put a pentagram belt on.
He could be in The Simpsons where they're singing.
Yeah, in the Stonecutters.
It looks like that type of robe. But it's interesting that they go, the logic follows. It's like, well, the bum has similar lines to the palm, but that's. Means that you believe in the palm reading.
Yes.
That's an assumption they're making. It's like, hey, you know how you can read palms. If you say no to that, they go, well, then maybe reading's not for you.
It makes no less sense than reading a palm.
That's true. Why, what part of the body, what lines are okay and what lines aren't okay to read?
It's just funny that it's an ass. Let's keep going. We're about halfway through.
By running his fingers along a number of lines on the surface of a client's posterior...
First of all, isn't it weird? Is this guy Australian?
Or he does sound Australian. I kind of feel like I can almost pick the voice.
He says he can predict their future, monetary success, family life, health, and happiness.
I think he's Kiwi.
Clairvoyant Buck says lines representing success, career, and artistic ability extend inwards from the outer shape of the buttocks, while a further five lines radiate outwards.
It's this bloke for sure. That's the voice of the guy.
The guy getting the reading looks like he's a reject from an 80s hair metal band.
Well, this is probably from an era where Louis Theroux was doing his weird weekends.
Yeah.
And I wonder if this was someone who was, you know, inspired by that. It's like, I'm going to go, you know, the journalist who goes and tries some type of fringe.
Yeah, puts himself into the difficult, uncomfortable positions. Yeah.
Although he admits that it will probably take society a long time to take it seriously, his clients feel that it works for them. Buck, who lives in the northern German village of Meldorf, says all types of people come to him to have their bottoms read. He sees his blindness as a great asset.
He's come prepared. The client has come prepared. He's wearing a G-string.
Well, is he, or is he just giving himself a wedgie?
At least because it means customers I think it's do not a risk having their identities revealed. Buck has been blind since the age of 3.
He's blind as well, which adds...
isn't that a bit of a trope?
Yeah, it's an approachable level of mysticism of like, oh, he can't see with his eyes, so he must be able to see more.
Well, the other senses become stronger, don't they? But I don't know. Well, that's what Carl
believes that.
No, but that is a fact, that other senses do become stronger.
Do they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can hear better, certainly.
I don't know about that.
I think that's a fact.
Really?
I think it's a fact that if you lose your sight, that your other senses do get stronger. But I don't think that
the space in your mind that it is taken up by processing...
Isn't that neural plasticity?
Okay, let's do some research and come back to that. We're currently watching a man in a robe touch another man's bum.
Although he claims to have spent many years training his fingers, his index and middle fingers being the most sensitive, Buck says even...
Well, I mean, his tongue's more sensitive. Maybe he should be exploring this man's bum with his tongue.
Can make a broad brush assessment of people's personalities.
Buck... See, he is literally, like you said, he is literally just touching... He's been touching little butt pimples.
Yeah. I'd want to wash your hands afterwards.
Who's married is quick to shoot down any suggestion that his buttock feeling might be motivated by anything other than a genuine desire to tell people's futures.
Let's have a quick... So there's about 17 seconds left. Yes or no, will it end with a pun?
About bums?
Yeah.
In what we're going to get to the bottom of the problem or...
Yeah.
He's the butt of all jokes, something like that. I reckon pretty strong.
I'm going to say I don't think so, just based on the music and how sincere this whole thing
is. I think they could go for a kind of a half-sincere pun. Like, it's not going for a big laugh, but it's a little bit clever.
Okay, let's find out.
He says that it works and that there is no need for him to grope.
Well, I mean, almost.
Is that a pun?
And also, he's not a deviant.
Is that a pun? Is grope used in another context?
No,
it's not a description of mood.
It was just they ended that piece by saying,
"Very strange."
He's not a pervert. Okay, I know what you're all thinking.
Yeah, I'll come back to the jingle.
Ah, well, no pun. Bumology. Will you be signing up?
I did hear on the radio recently, for the first time as an adult, I haven't heard this for a long time, like a medium or like someone who says that they can...
With a caller over the radio.
Yeah. And I hadn't heard that, you know, in many years. And it's incredible how broad where accepting this is. He's like, I'm seeing some type of color. Was it blue? No, my mum hated blue. Yes, it was negative. Like there's some type of vehicle in the back of the house. No, we always had a clear back.
Mm.
Okay, well then it wasn't a vehicle. It might have been some type of big feature. No, there was just a brick wall. And it's the brick wall. That's what I'm seeing. The brick wall. I'm like, what?
They should freshen it up with a bumologist, particularly now that everything's video. Mm. I can think of certain breakfast radio shows that might jump at the opportunity to have a bumologist come in
Get
and bring in
read.
A girl with a great butt and are a very fit dude with a great butt, and then they get to film it and put it on the internet.
Mm-hmm. And check it's back in with
content.
Them. See how accurate they were.
Yeah. How accurate was your bum? So then in break eight, Carl belts through some stories here. The one about gay rams and a pretty remarkable story about a proposal.
He was like, we'll do it in time and all that. Anyway, comes home from work one day. He says, oh, go on then, we'll get married. She was so shocked, her hair fell out.
You're a married man, Zach. Anything like that happen when you proposed? When
no.
the proposal happened?
No.
Did you lose your hair?
Not yet. Yeah, Ricky was quite tickled by this, and I think
it's the best punchline of the episode.
He turns to the camera and he says, "Did you get that?
Yeah, yeah.
You guys were filming, right?
That's nice. Yeah, and I agree with him because they didn't really get anything from any like Carl funniness, and that's like a great Carl delivery.
I thought it's so interesting that the difference in the lines, their hair fell out, or they started losing their hair. Don't you think those are two very different statements? Because if you say stress, you had something in your life, you have something at work that caused you stress and your hair started to fall out, that's very believable.
Mm.
But if you say, because it indicates a time period, but if you say this one thing happened and their hair fell out, that's still technically a way of describing it in a somewhat accurate way, but that sounds very unbelievable.
Well, in my mind, it is like, will you marry me? And it all just jumps out of her hair.
In The Simpsons where Homer,
his
last three hairs just like pop out.
Yeah. We also get the lizard hat story, which is true, from 17 July 2002. A rare chameleon was seized by customs officers after it was spotted perched on the head of its 17-year-old owner in an airport arrivals hall. Fellow travellers noticed the reptile being worn on the girl's headscarf as she waited to collect luggage at Manchester Airport. The teenager had bought the lizard as a pet from a market stall in Saudi Arabia. She had taken it on a flight from Dubai to visit British relatives without realizing she needed an export and import papers.
So she wasn't trying to pass it as a hat, which is kind of like the subtext to Carl's story.
It's a lizard. It'll hang out on my head. No problem. In break nine, we come back to something we talked about earlier, which is that nothing in Carl's life has been planned. He's just seen what happened. It's quite a zen go with the flow approach to life. And
wouldn't it be amazing if Carl did become the leader of some type of like sect?
Yeah,
where he does have this. I can imagine him in like what would be his ultimate temple, like just some hut on a hill that he doesn't.
It would be a caravan. that you come and see the wise bald master Pilkington.
Yeah, and he'd have some Jaffa cakes and some tea there for you to have.
Yeah,
and he'd be like, drink the tea, have a Jaffa cake.
And you'd tell him your problems and he'd say, I'm not bothered. And neither should you be. Don't know why he sounds like a beetle. But, yeah, that's a path that he could go down still. It will, in fact, he'll only be more suited to that role the older he gets.
I wonder if he gets, because he's quite easily, last week we heard about how frustrated he was with the elderly gentleman who was a removalist. He's quite easily irritated as a young man. Which way will he go as he moves into old man? Will he be, because it can go either way. You can get more agitated, you being angry old man, but also I know older men who kind of mellow out.
They soften, yeah. It does go one of two ways. There's still a world in which Carl becomes like a Piers Morgan type right-wing commentator, just angry at everything.
I would love that, but not politics.
He just has
some type of show where he rants about like that chip packets are getting smaller.
Yes, shrinkflation. And then we get the hammered up story, which is broadly true. They see we use this like pig fat actors to get makeup off. And then Carl asks again about MTV, how much will he get? Because he just moved to a house thinking he was working at XFM.
Also, I thought interesting about that, the confidence he has in his job. In any of the radio jobs you've ever had, would you buy a house near the station?
Yeah, no, I'm even scared about like signing a year-long lease to rent because things seem to change so quickly.
Actually, I do know a radio announcer who worked on your station who bought a house near the station.
We'll talk about that afterwards.
Okay. But I think they were on a wage that they could buy a few houses, so it wasn't a big issue.
Good for them. Yeah. I've just heard about someone else who's like a very high-paid breakfast host who was just like, oh, yeah, just bought another house like on a whim.
Why not?
Yeah, why not? If you can, why not?
I don't like, you know, each to their own. If that's what you're able to do, great. But I don't like when they then pretend on air to be an everyman or, they pretend to that they're still battling it out.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. It's been spoken about. Comedian Dave Hughes has managed to do. He made his way making jokes about how he's on the dole. Mm. And now he like owns one of the houses that was on the block and stuff. But he's still managing to keep that persona relatable. That like I'm struggling, but now it's a different kind of like the stress that it causes.
But I don't think he's trying to pretend that he's not rich.
No, that's the thing. He's leaning into it. Yes, and I am a Bogan from Warrnambool who's now got too much money.
And I think Australians love that.
Yeah.
Because we go, oh, he's done good.
Yeah.
But I don't like it when people, it's like they tell a story about a house party to sound relatable, but the reality was it was like some dinner party that they put on.
They rented out the whole restaurant. Yeah.
That's what
it was. I heard Will Anderson talking to Dave Hughes on his podcast, and he said, like, there are elements of my success which I feel I should keep secret because it's not something that will be palatable to an audience. But you, Dave Hughes, have managed to not be constrained by that. You don't have to hide your success. You embrace it and it becomes a part of your thing. So, yeah, totally. Ricky sort of as well. He's like always, you know, he came from a working class estate in Reading and now lives in a very big house.
Although he does enjoy at this stage of his stardom, just throwing in this one, he mentions that he was at a dinner party that Jonathan Ross had put on. He doesn't mind saying that he's rubbing shoulders with the entertainment elite.
They end the show in such a great way to end a radio show, which is just recap what happened. it's probably the laziest approach, but why not?
On the show today. Guys, what you've missed, what you can catch up in the podcast.
Yeah, it's 2002, podcasts don't exist yet.
I don't mind that though because it kind of adds some texture. It makes it sound like that it was that something was happening.
Well, we came up, I think it was on this show, the idea that at the end of a show you do that break but you make up what was on the show to make it sound much bigger. Did you have a favorite bit?
Yeah, well, it has to be just that I liked the crab story. Okay. I thought it was interesting.
I'm going to stick with Carl's mum's Rockbusters.
What was your favourite one?
This group has lots of ideas. Imagination. Next week on the show, Series 2, Episode 17, Claire Sturge is back in for Carl. Now, I just want to, instead of saying what's on the show, I'll just read this comment below the video on YouTube. We all love Carl. No one is denying that, but let's be honest here. Claire made the shows, in inverted commas, better. No Carl brought the best out of them. Ricky and Steve have way more energy when Carl's absent. They both are way funnier, especially Steve. Steve is at his most hilarious when there's no Carl. So that's on the next show. And I think it speaks to what you said about like them going too far the other way. I feel like next show is going to be a bit of a reset.
Yeah, true. Also, I was just thinking, I wonder if you edited out everything Steve said in this episode, how many minutes it would be. God, it would probably be under 5.
Yeah. So it's been a few weeks now since we've heard anything really substantial from them. So on the next show, we will hear that bit of reinvigoration, a bit of Steve and Carl, Steve and Ricky as the headliners. So that's next time on the show. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com, Carly Pilk Boys. If you'd like to support the show, it helps like validate us doing this and persisting with it.
Sure.
So if you can kick us a couple of bucks, it's $2 a month, the entry level. So please get around that. If you're not already, you can contact us, carlypilkboyspod@gmail.com. Instagram, Zach Manders on Instagram and TikTok. It's where he does his finest work. Z-A-C-H-M-A-N-D-E-R. And I'm David Ferrier, Cartoons. Zach, we haven't worked on that idea. Zach Mandarins teaches you Mandarin. Zach while Mander, eating a Mandarin. Yeah, in China or something like that. Yeah, anyway. All right. See you next time.
Bye.
She was so shocked, her hair fell out.